right, welcome back into the Nick Bob Podcast. I am taping this. It is early Saturday morning. I'm in Denver with the Creighton Blue Jays and wanted to get a recap pod out to Creighton's first-round win over NC State and also take a little peek at the Baylor Bears who loom for Creighton's matchup on Sunday evening. So let's get into it. So Creighton wins. Creighton beats NC State in what was a stressful grinder, 72-63. And, you know, that game didn't quite play out like I thought it would on paper. I thought it would be a high-scoring, fast-paced, up-and-down game where the three-point shot would loom incredibly large. Instead, it was kind of a slower-paced, lower-scoring game where the three-point shot loomed large, but neither team could make them. And I'm not going to lie, when I'm sitting courtside doing the game on the radio for Creighton, and when it got to 37-30 NC State, they made a little run to start the second half. They're up seven. It's the 16-minute mark. It's about like 16:15 left or something like that. I didn't feel good about it. I thought, oh, man, Creighton's not shooting well. All of a sudden, they're starting to get it rolling. And to Greg McDermott's credit, it was an interesting moment. Greg McDermott didn't call a timeout. I really thought he was going to. And in fact, internally, I thought, oh, he needs to call a timeout. Instead, he lets his guys battle through it. And if you remember, Nembhard drove in there on the left side, got a layup, make it 37-32. Creighton gets a stop, and then Creighton comes down and Kalkbrenner gets fouled. And now Kalkbrenner's at the line. I think he made both free throws. And so now it's 37-34. There was a media timeout, and all the momentum had kind of subsided. In total, after it got to 37-30, Creighton went on a 26-10 run to seize control of the game and really not relinquish it. Sure, there were some stressful moments down the stretch, but that little 26-10 run proved to be kind of where the game was decided. But Creighton had to earn this one, boy. Really had to earn it. So, you know, I said on the radio pregame show with John Bishop on the call for Creighton, we always do a thing where my three keys to the game. And my three keys to the game were turnovers, the three-point line, and Ryan Kalkbrenner. Turnovers, three-point line, Ryan Kalkbrenner. And if you take a look at those three areas now after the fact, after the game is done, they ended up looming pretty large. You start with turnovers. Creighton only finished with eight turnovers for the game. To take it a step further, Creighton only had two turnovers in the entire second half. NC State led the ACC in turnovers forced. They're really active. They're really trying to get deflections and turn you over. So to only turn it over eight times and twice in the second half against NC State is impressive. Creighton took care of the ball. That was incredibly important. You look at the three-point line. Morsell, Smith, and Joyner. Derquavion Smith and Jarkel Joyner. Those three guys combined to make 228 threes on the year coming into that game. It was going to be absolutely imperative for Creighton to defend the three-point line as those three guys, Smith and Joyner in particular, are going to be hunting threes and hunting long threes. NC State was 3 of 14 from three. So not only did NC State not light it up from beyond the arc, Creighton did a good job of not allowing NC State to even take threes, which was huge. And I'll get more into this, that element of things in a second. But Creighton did a good job defending the three-point line. And then for Creighton in terms of the three-point line, this is, you know, Creighton goes 3 for 20. And this is kind of what can happen with this team from three. They're really hot and cold from downtown. They can have games where they make 12, 13, 14 threes. And they can have games like this one, where they are ice cold, they go 3 for 20 from three, and at one point, Creighton missed 15 or 16 straight threes. It was funny, Baylor Shireman made the first three of the game, and then Creighton missed like 15 or 16 straight threes until Ryan Kalkbrenner, of all people, had to hit a top of the key three in the second half. So Creighton was really struggling from beyond the arc, and that's kind of like, I can't sit here and say like I'm surprised. Sometimes I think we allow Creighton's reputation and history for everybody to assume. It's kind of like I don't know what it is. The second you put on a Creighton uniform, you instantly are a good 3-point shooter. It's like, I don't know how good a 3-point shooting team this is. I think they're capable. Obviously, they've had games where, Trey Alexander can hit 6, 7, 8 threes in a game. Baylor Shireman can hit 5, 6, 7, 8 threes in a game. But overall, this team over the course of 30 some odd games now has not shot the ball consistently from beyond the arc. But I will say, speaking of Baylor Shireman, boy, you got to hand it to him, right? You got to hand it to Baylor Shireman. He hit a big three late in the game and another long jumper where his foot was on the line late in the game. But still, and I'll get more into those shots in a little bit, but still, the three-point line loomed large for this team because you could argue the only reason this was a game, the only reason this game was close at all was because Creighton couldn't make a three, especially in the first half. Like, if Creighton, instead of going 3 for 20, if Creighton goes 7 or 8 for 20, which isn't necessarily lighting it up, this game is likely a comfortable win for the Blue Jays. So, this 3-point shooting continues to be real streaky, real hot and cold, real boom or bust, but kudos to Creighton to at least defending the three and to Shireman for making a big one when the team really needed it late. And lastly, Ryan Kalkbrenner. I put him as a key to the game because I felt like the biggest advantage in this game when I looked at the matchups was Kalkbrenner. I felt like he needed to dominate, and boy, did he. Wow. 31 points, 11 of 14 from the floor, 8 of 9 from the free throw line. He defended NC State's big guy DJ Burns really well. And most importantly, Kalkbrenner got every big for NC State into foul trouble. I love, not every stat sheet does this, but I love stat sheets that they chart both your personal fouls and the fouls you drew. So the fouls you created, which is a pretty important stat, right? Kalkbrenner, in that game against NC State, drew 10 fouls. 10. He got DJ Burns and Duana into foul trouble, which was absolutely massive, especially Burns. Because Burns not being able to score over Kalkbrenner and then getting into foul trouble made NC State completely one-dimensional offensively, which was really important. But Kalkbrenner was incredible. 31 points. When nobody else for Creighton could, for most of the game, could make a shot, his 31 points were vital and needed. And he made his free throws. So it's one thing to draw fouls and get to the line. It's another thing to knock down your free throws. He made his free throws, 8 or 9 from the line. And, now that the first round games are in the books, you look across the entire first round, I don't think anybody had a better first round performance and a better first round game than Ryan Kalkbrenner did. There were some other players across the first round of the NCAA tournament that played well, but I don't know if anybody played better than Kalkbrenner did. It's just amazing to watch this guy play. Kalkbrenner is as good of a big at keeping the ball high when he catches it as I've seen in college. And that's kind of big guy one-on-one. If you go to any basketball camp, you talk to any sort of post-player coach, big guy one-on-one is when you catch it in the post or you get an offensive rebound, keep the ball high and go back up with it. Because if you catch it and you bring it down low, now you're bringing the ball down low to where everybody can get it. A little Nembhard can swipe at the ball, right? Little 5'10 guys can now swipe at the ball. But if you keep it high and think about Kalkbrenner, 7'1", when he catches the ball, he puts the ball straight up above his head. I mean, that ball's about, damn near 8 feet high. And he's elite at that. He's got elite hands and feel around the rim to catch lobs, turn, and finish in one quick motion, which is not easy, whether it's the pick and roll lobs or the running the floor lobs or he gets a guy rooted up the floor and there's a throw over the top and he's able to catch in one motion, turn, and lay it in. It is really, really impressive. The Nick Bob Podcast is powered by Runza. There are a lot of ways to greet someone. Hey, hi, hello, what's up? Another way is, what's popping? Well, here's the thing. That greeting has taken on a new meaning now because the answer to what's popping is now Runza's new popcorn chicken. That's what's popping. Runza's new popcorn chicken is amazing. Little bite-sized, delicious, all white meat chicken that make any day better immediately. I love them. My wife loves them. My kids cannot get enough. 2-year-old Mac, 6-year-old Mava are constantly wanting to get it popping. Great for a snack, great for a meal. Pair them with the best crinkle fries on planet Earth, and you are set. All I got to say is you need to get out to a Runza location nearest you and get it popping. What's so hard to understand about that? Get it popping with Runza's all-new popcorn chicken. Runza makes it all better. His progression to where he's at as a player is remarkable. For all the credit that you know, Creighton's program, and it kind of you think of it as a kind of a guard-led program. It's a three-point shooting identity type of college basketball program. But, like, one of the more underrated things is what Greg McDermott has done with big guys in terms of player development. Martin Crumple, Justin Patton, Christian Bishop, Ryan Kalkbrenner. Like, every big that's come through that has a little bit of potential, boy, does Greg McDermott and his staff get them to maximize. And Kalkbrenner's the latest example of that. So, in a lot of ways, those three areas that I just laid out allowed for Creighton to win the game. Kalkbrenner dominated. I mean, he looked like Kareem out there for a little bit. He took care of Creighton took care of the ball, didn't have a turnover fest, which I was worried about. And then, while Creighton was cold from three, they did a good job defending the three-point line against NC State. Real quick, I want to talk Creighton defensively, in terms of what they did defensively in that game. You do got to tip your cap to Greg McDermott and that staff for the plan and the execution of that plan on defense. While they weren't unbelievable on that end of the floor, I thought they did a nice job in that, you know, obviously Creighton's plan is to do what they do for the most part in terms of how they're defending ball screens and where they want shots taken. But it was really heightened in terms of emphasis of defending the three-point line, given the fact of what I just laid out with those three-point shooters for NC State. They wanted to make Smith and Joyner take tough twos, give no kick-out threes, no off-the-dribble ball screen threes, no walk-into-transition threes, and Creighton did that extremely well. And sure, Taquavion Smith had 32 points, but he took 27 shots. And NC State's offense basically became everyone stand and watch Smith come off a ball screen and launch himself into the lane and take really hard twos over Ryan Kalkbrenner. He made a bunch, but he also missed a bunch. And nobody else got involved. He took 27 shots. The team took 64 total shots. So one guy, Smith, took nearly half of their shots. And as a team, NC State only had 3 team assists for the game. That's it. 3 team assists. They had 0 team assists in the first half. And a lot of that is by design defensively. Whoever was guarding Smith, it was mostly Trey Alexander, go over a high ball screen. Kalkbrenner plays drop coverage, ready to deal with Smith as he comes into the paint. Don't step off of Morsell or Joyner or anyone else. And that's the plan. NC State averages a little over 78 points per game on the season. They scored 63 points. NC State shot 37% from the floor. You hold a team 15 points under their scoring average and under 40% shooting from the floor, pretty good. And turn them into a one-dimensional offense, that's pretty good. Quick rundown of some just individual player thoughts. Kalkbrenner, we've talked about him a bunch. He scored. He drew fouls. He made his free throws. He played 38 minutes. He ran the floor hard. He took Smith, you know, took on Smith all game long and drop coverage, which is amazing. You know, the fact that he was able to play 38 minutes is amazing. In the altitude, high intense game, 38 minutes from the big fella. I still feel like Creighton doesn't get him the ball enough. People who are listening on the radio are probably like, hey, get a new line other than you think Kalkbrenner needs to get the ball. That was the game. I just felt like every time, think about it this way, every time Creighton had the ball and Kalkbrenner didn't get a touch, NC State was like, thank God. Like, you needed to find a way to just get tough and get him more touches. But still, he ended up with 31 points, which is really good. 31 points, 11 of 14, 8 of 9 from the line, drew 10 fouls. I mean, big time. Ryan Nemhard, I actually thought he played pretty good. He wasn't great, but I thought he was pretty solid. First ever NCAA tournament game, 37 minutes versus NC State's pressure, zero turnovers for Nemhard. 37 minutes, dealing with three-quarter court pressure, on-ball pressure, didn't turn it over one time. Your point guard plays 37 minutes and doesn't turn it over, you at least give yourself a chance. And he also made a few driving layups late in the second half that were really, really important. They were worried about Kalkbrenner on the roll, and he was able to snake into the lane and finished two times in big spots. I thought Nemhard was solid. I thought he was solid. Trey Alexander didn't have a great day offensively. He was a little cold, finished with 9 points for the game on 4 of 12 shooting from the field. But, you know, I mean, it's sometimes hard when you spend 30, I mean, he played 36 minutes, almost 37 minutes, and he's chasing Terquavion Smith the whole game. That's not easy, you know? That's not easy. I will say Alexander had a big drive and finish late, but he also had a huge block on a Smith jump shot on the right kind of short corner area that was a big play late in the game. He was able to recover, use his long arms. He's got a long wingspan. And he blocked Smith's jump shot in a big spot in the game. Trey needs to be better offensively, but he certainly wasn't bad against NC State. Baylor Shireman, tell you what, man, you got to admire his confidence. He even said it to John Bishop and I after the game in the post game radio interview. You know, he said basically, no matter how I'm shooting, I'm still confident. I can miss a bunch of shots and I'm still confident. That proved to be true on Friday afternoon in Denver. Like, he was cold, he was missing shots, but when Creighton needed two big long-range jumpers, Shireman delivered. With 2 minutes and 27 seconds left, Creighton is up 3 with 5 seconds on the shot clock. He buried a big 3 from the right wing that was probably the biggest shot of the game to push the lead to 6. And then the dagger. He hit one more long 2. His foot was on the line with about 1 minute left from the right corner to push the lead to 8 to really kind of seal the win. So in the final 2.5 minutes of the game, he hit 2 big, big long jump shots. Better late than never, but those were 2 enormously important shots from Shireman late in that game. Arthur Kaluma, I thought he was okay. You know what's amazing? His stat line was pretty good. You know, 10 points, 9 rebounds, 4 assists. That's not bad for Kaluma, right? He got to the line 6 times. He was 6 for 6 from the free throw line. He, you know, I'm a broken record with him. I'm always like, when he's under control and playing with a paint mentality, like driving to the basket, being under control, he's so much better of a player than when he's settling or pounding the ball too much. He made some good under control drives to the basket. He drew 4 fouls, which was good. I thought Kaluma was solid. He wasn't spectacular, but he was solid. And that's about it in terms of the guys who played. You know, Farabello was okay. You know, he was 1 for 1 from the floor, only played about 17 minutes. He was okay. I thought Sharif Mitchell might get a little more opportunities in that game because of his defense, but went with Farabello, and it's hard because you don't want to take Alexander or Nemhard out of the game. It does look like Mason Miller really hurt his ankle. You know, again, I'm taping this on a Saturday morning. I think the x-rays came back, negative. So it was just a really bad sprained ankle. I would probably say he's doubtful for Sunday, but who knows? I mean, I remember my junior year at Indiana State. I rolled my ankle as bad as I've ever rolled my ankle. I left the game. It was the only game I left the game on crutches. And we went straight to play at Evansville. We had like a day in between the games. And it was the only time ever where I was like, there's no way I'm going to be able to play in this game. No way I'm going to be able to play in this game. I'm in the Evansville hotel, ice in my ankle. The shit blew up to look like a volleyball. I mean, it was huge. I was struggling. But we got the swelling to go down a little bit. We taped it up. I went through warm-ups. I felt like I could kind of move. I gave it a go. I hit 3 threes in the first half. And that's a pretty good pain reliever, and I was able to play. So you never know. You never know. I would say Mason Miller's doubtful, which sucks for him and for the team, because he's been playing more lately, and he's important because he can make a three consistently. Like, you can throw him in there for Kaluma, and now all of a sudden you do have a guy that you got to honor from the three-point line. Sometimes teams play Kaluma and they plug up the lane, which makes it hard for drivers and for Kalkbrenner. But we'll see how he recovers. So there you go. Creighton beats NC State, advances to the second round, where Baylor awaits. And let's talk a little bit about Baylor real quick. You know, a lot of people bring up the whole, you know, 2014, you know, Doug's team that lost huge in the NCAA tournament, little revenge. Like, yeah, I suppose. I don't know. There's been a lot of time elapsed since that game. Like, yeah, I don't know. Like, in a weird way, if Creighton beats Baylor, is it like, yeah, take that from 10 years ago? Like, I don't know. Maybe. I get it, you know, but like I'm not as into that storyline as maybe other people are. Like, none of these people are the same players. Like, you know, it's yeah, sure, it's Greg McDermott and Scott Drew, but I don't know. Like, you want to talk about that storyline? Cool, I'll talk about it. Do I think it's the most amazing storyline ever? 10 years ago, Baylor beat Creighton. Like, okay. You know, I mean, it was unfortunate just because it was that ended what was at the time the most popular and most beloved, and I still think it maybe is, Creighton basketball team of all time, with the greatest Creighton basketball player of all time in Doug McDermott. That was the most upset I've ever been after a game that I didn't play in. I was heartbroken for those guys. I had grown to be really close to those guys, like Gibbs and Rocky, and those guys were at my wedding. Like, those were my guys, man. And that was a fun team. The Jays fans got to watch that group grow and develop for 4 or 5 years together. So it was sad, but I'm not as into like the revenge. Like, I don't know. Adam Flagler was what, like 12 years old at the time for Baylor? Ryan Kalkbrenner was 12 years old. You know? Like, I mean, Ryan Nemhard was probably 10. Like, I don't know. The Nick Bob Podcast is brought to you by Pella Windows and Doors, and I want to talk to you guys about energy efficiency. And if you go onto Pella's website right now, you look at it, and how about this? 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 different types of windows or doors by Pella won the Energy Star 2020 Most Energy Efficient Award. That's big time stuff right there. And they achieved that in a couple of ways. They got insulated glass, which slows the heat transfer, keeping your home at a more comfortable temperature. They got types of low E glass, which is a glass coating that has been optimized for your climate. They got triple pane glass, which you can upgrade to for increased insulating airspace. And within all of that, one of the keys is proper installation, which is key for window and doors to perform at their best. And you know the Pella experts are excellent at that. Bottom line, energy efficiency matters in making your home more comfortable, and Pella Windows and Doors are at the top of the line when it comes to energy efficiency. Check them out online, PellaOmaha.com. That's PellaOmaha.com. So, but let's talk a little about Baylor real quick. Baylor beat UCSB, UC Santa Barbara, 74-56. The game was, I was sitting courtside and for that game, like, it was competitive for about 25 minutes or so. It looked like, man, Baylor's going to get pushed here. But Baylor ended up putting their foot on the gas and pulled away in the game. You know, without getting too into the weeds, Baylor, I'll just say this. Baylor is very similar to NC State in that they are guard-led and they're aggressive on defense. So a lot of the points of emphasis are the same in this game as they were against NC State. Got to be ready to defend the Baylor guards. Got to be ready to defend the three-point line. Got to be ready to take care of the basketball. Baylor is similar to NC State. They're just better and more efficient. They're just better. They're bigger. They're stronger. They're more efficient. They execute better on offense. They take better shots. They play with more purpose. They're bigger in the front line. They're bigger in the backcourt. And their three guards, I told you in Creighton preview podcast for the NCAA tournament, Adam Flagler, LJ Cryer, and Keontae George are really good. This is the best trio of guards Creighton has seen all year. No doubt about it. They're strong, where NC State, Smith, and Joyner were a little skinnier and smaller. Like, they list Smith at 6'4". Yeah, come on. Dude is closer to 6'1 or 6'2 than he is 6'4". But these guards are good, man. Adam Flagler has got an NCAA championship ring. Dude won a title 2 years ago, averaged about 9 points per game. So he clearly can play. Keontae George is a projected lottery pick in the NBA draft. So clearly he can play. The game starts there, slowing in particular, I think, those two guys down. I don't want to, I mean, LJ Cryer is really good too, but I think those two are the are really the dudes that lead, that lead the charge. So I think the plan will be similar defensively. Force those guys into making and taking tough twos and tough pull-up jump shots in the paint around the 15-foot area and put a hand up. Hopefully it's Ryan Kalkbrenner's hand and rebound and defend the three. Now, what's hard is all three guards can make tough jump shots. They're all pretty damn good at making tough off the dribble jumpers. But if I'm Creighton, I'd just rather have them be twos than off the dribble threes, kick out threes. Because think about this: Baylor gets 37% of its offense, 37% of its points from the 3-point line. That ranks 23rd in the country. And 45% of Baylor's field goal attempts are threes. That ranks 22nd in the country. So to me, it's pretty clear the point of emphasis that you need to have if you're defending Baylor. You got to sell out to trying to take away the 3-point line. Run those dudes off the line. Not saying just, you know, Olay defense, out of control closeouts, and let those guys shoot layups, but you know what I mean. I think a great place to start your defensive plan is defending the three. Baylor has the number two ranked offense, according to KenPom, number two. They can really score. Second in the nation. And the 3-point line is the leading cause of that. So I think Creighton needs to have a similar plan to shutting off the three like they did against NC State. Now, it's easier said than done because I think Baylor runs better offense, and they got three really talented shot creators in Flagler, George, and Cryer, that all three of those guys can put it on the deck and make things happen, can score, can distribute. So, you know, a lot of it is guard your yard. You know, Creighton's guards got to be ready to defend one-on-one. They got to be in a stance, ready to fight the dribble, make things tough, fight over the top of ball screens, get ready to fight through action, anticipate screens, all those sorts of things to get attached to the body. Because if you let airspace happen, if you go under a screen or you get separation, you're in trouble. You are in trouble. So it starts with slowing down the guards, starts with taking away the 3-point line. In terms of Baylor's defense, Baylor isn't near as good as they've been in the years past on that end of the floor. They're right around 100th in KenPom's defensive efficiency ranking. I think they were 101 when the NCAA tournament started. I thought I checked last night and they were 98th. So they're right around 100, right at that 98, 99, 100 ranking, which is pretty meh. NC State was around 80. They were 80th in KenPom defense. So according to KenPom, NC State was a little better defensively. But where I'm concerned with Baylor is I think Baylor across the roster is a stronger team than NC State. They're seeing them in person, they're a strong group. Flagler's strong. You know, those Everyday John is a strong guy. Like, those guys are strong. But where I'm also concerned, and I think they'll vary it up, but Baylor also at times will hard hedge and even trap some ball screens, which, oddly enough, it's kind of amazing that Creighton has not seen a ton of that. They've not seen a lot. They've seen switching. They've seen drop coverage. They've seen some icing of ball screens where you try to not let Nembhard come off it and force him to the baseline. They have not seen a lot of hard hedging. I'm talking really come like shoulders parallel to the sideline, force the ball handler to go up the floor. Like, they've not seen a ton of that. Baylor will throw that out there sometimes. Be interested to see how Creighton handles it. Now, you better be on point with that if you do that, because, you know, if you get out of that hard hedge or you get out of that trap, now Creighton's pretty good in a scramble situation, 4-on-3. But in that scenario, if you're locked in with your hedge or your trap, it's harder to get the pick and roll lobs, the flip ups to the rim for Kalkbrenner, which is a huge part of Creighton's offense. And then I do think sometimes Nembhard's size can become an issue in terms of vision in passing out of a hard hedge or out of a double team, just because Nembhard's not the biggest guy in the world. Now, I do not think they're going to throw a hard hedge out there for 40 minutes or a double for 40 minutes, but I think they're going to throw a little bit out there, try and get Creighton out of rhythm, give them something different to look at. They've done it throughout the year. Be interesting to see how Creighton handles that. Be interesting to see how Creighton handles that because, again, Baylor's active. They don't force turnovers at the rate that NC State does, but their guards are strong. They're active. They're aggressive. So I do think it's another game in which Creighton's got to be able to take care of the ball because it's not like Xavier is a team that turns you over a whole bunch, and Creighton coughed it up a bunch against Xavier in the semifinals of the Big East tournament. And again, I think defensively across the backcourt, this is a better defensive team than the Xavier guards. Better than Boom and Kunkel and Jones. I mean, Flagler, Cryer, and Keontae George are stronger and better defensively. So this is a true coin flip game, man. Vegas favors Baylor by 1.5. That was kind of the opening line. So, I mean, true coin flip game. Should be a hell of a game. And, man, given what has happened in Creighton's region, the South region, boy, is there a major opportunity in front of Creighton here. Because Arizona, the 2 seed, was upset by Princeton in the first round. Even Virginia, the 4 seed, was beat by Furman in the first round. So the 2 seed, gone. The 4 seed, gone. Bama is the 1 seed in Creighton's region. They're ridiculously good. But they are led by a freshman in Brandon Miller. He didn't score in their first round game. And a massive cloud of drama is continuing to surround him and that team with the fact that he brought a gun to a murder of a young woman. And I think that drama and that story is only going to get louder each game that passes. So Creighton's got an opportunity here. You get by Baylor. If you get by Baylor, you are going to be playing one of Missouri, who's okay. I mean, they were a 7 seed. They're okay. You're going to be playing one of Missouri or Princeton to go to the Elite Eight. Pretty good, right? Wow. But first things first, Creighton's got to be ready to rock Sunday evening against Baylor. Those Baylor guards, man, the way they shoot the three, the way they can create that offense, number 2, KenPom offensive efficiency offense in the country. Creighton's defense has been up to the challenge more often than not, but this is going to be a massive challenge for Creighton on a variety of levels. But it is an exciting opportunity ahead for the Blue Jays. We'll see if Creighton answers the bell.
A Herd at Sports Network production.